You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Jamie Spence.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as David Law claims a maiden European Tour title following a dramatic conclusion to the ISPS Handa Vic Open.
Something that I never thought would have happened at the start of today, you know, but I dug in the back nine and, you know, especially those last three holes, you know, we tried hard to finish, you know, really strong, and luckily we did.
And we'll speak to the Scot on the show shortly. So delight for Law, but despair for Wade Ormsby, who narrowly missed the chance to lift the trophy on home soil.
Got to try and take the positives from it. Disappointed for sure, but yeah, what can I say? Just disappointed. It'd be nice to pinch run on home soil, but anyway, onwards to next week.
A look back at the best of the action to come, plus we'll also preview the next event, the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined by two-time European Tour winner and all-round legend Jamie Spence, and legend of the microphone around the world, golf broadcaster and commentator Richard Kaufman. Good day to you both.
Hello, Robert.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, so down in Australia, it's always a nice way to start the year. Always good conditions normally, but quite breezy this week.
Yeah, well, especially on Saturday. Mm. I've been to this golf course because a good friend of mine lives in Ocean Grove, 5 minutes down the road. He's a member there, and I did text him at the weekend. I've actually walked around the course, haven't played it because it did bring back memories for me. So down there near Geelong, southwest of Melbourne, and it proved a real test, especially at the weekend when the wind blew. It was a bit of a birdie fest early in the week, but yeah, some good golf for the weekend.
An amazing finish for David Law, Richard.
Yeah, an incredible finish. I don't know how... I don't know how far out he thought he had a chance of winning, but he ended up taking the trophy. It's a great event, lovely feel to it. Of course, I know you're going to touch on it, the men and the women playing there. The galleries weren't roped off. You had people walking dogs and all sorts of things going on around the players. Lovely feel to the whole event.
An amazing story, the Law story, with the trouble he had with the game, thinking about packing it in, then a reprieve on the Challenge Tour, gets on tour and wins in what? The end of February, or the beginning of February, an amazing turnaround for him, life-wise.
Yeah, I think winning the Scottish Hydro last year on the Challenge Tour was a big step for him. I think when you win on the Challenge Tour, you think, well, do you know what, I can play the game a bit here, I've got a chance. And that certainly, he got his card through the Challenge Tour, finished 14th. Four Scots as well got their cards through the Challenge Tour. So there's a bit of resurgence up there, north of the border in Scotland. And yeah, to come out early in the season and do that and get your exemption, you can plan the season and next season as well. It's a huge thing for him.
How much would Wade Ormsby be kicking himself?
Big time. Absolutely big time. That is going to hurt him. You know, he'd led all day. You know, he was the overnight leader. Nobody had gone above him until, well, he made a miss of 17. He had 11 pars in a row, came to 17, just overshot the green a little bit through the back and to the left. Played a poor chip shot, played another poor chip shot, missed the putt, double bogey 5, and suddenly he had to match David Law's eagle down the last. Otherwise, the Scotsman won, and he could only manage a birdie. That is definitely one that got away as far as Ormsby's concerned.
Well, Brad Kennedy finished 17 under par alongside Ormsby, one shot clear of South Africa's Justin Harding. But in the women's event that Richard touched on, it was also played over the beach course. Different tees, of course. The 13th Beach Golf Club is the name. Funny name for a golf club, isn't it? 13th Beach Golf Club.
It's because the course is by a beach, which is called the 13th Beach. So that's why it's called that.
Oh, I see. Céline Boutier, nice win for her, Jamie.
Yeah, well, Sarah Kemp shot 65 round of the day. The Australian, I think she thought she was going to finish about 5th or 6th. In the end, she came runner-up. If Boutier held in well, if she hadn't held a few putts coming in.
Well, you're missing the name that was at the top of the leaderboard all day, Kaufman. I mean, it's always good to see a Kaufman top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, but not surprised they faded away when it really mattered.
She ended up playing like Richard Kaufman through holes.
I hope not.
3-5 when she went bogey, bogey, double bogey. But yeah, Céline Boutier, you mentioned
no relation, Richard.
No relation, though. No niece of mine. Sarah Kemp, you mentioned it. She finished before the leaders went out. She went home and then suddenly was watching the coverage
back
at home. Better get back in the car and might be needed for a playoff.
Well,
it's incredible.
Sue Oh as well. She's a highly regarded young Australian player as well. She came runner-up as well. So, and then a young English girl, Charlotte Thomas. I think it was her first LPGA. Richard, you're well up on these.
Yeah,
LPGA.
It was her first start as a member of the LPGA Tour.
Incredible.
So to finish joint second, I mean, it's changed. I mean, Sarah Kemp doesn't have LPGA Tour full status. Now she's going to get into about 15 events after that runner-up finish. So for both Thomas and Kemp, it changes their season. And for Boutier, it's a Solheim Cup year as well. Suddenly, she's now a real contender to make Katrina Matthews' team in Glen Eagles as well.
So will she get a pick, or do you think she'll get the Boutier?
Boom.
Two fields.
Cut.
Two fields,
cut.
Jamie Spence.
Tumbleweed.
Jamie Spence, two fields, playing simultaneously over two courses, equal prize money, discuss.
Well, you've got it's a lot. You need. There's not many venues you can hold it on. You need two courses, which they've got here, the beach and the creek. 156 in each field. So there's logistical difficulties, to be honest with you, getting all those people around. I compared the scores. I think that's just a natural thing to do. I know Mr. Kaufman here said that's irrelevant. And apparently you're saying that 19 of the tees were the same tees. Is that
19
correct?
Of the 36 because it was played over two. Why is it so important?
I'm surprised with that.
Why is it so important to compare the scores? One was a men's event. One was a women's event. The only thing that was the same was they were playing on the same course at the same time for equal prize money.
Unless you're going to just completely stick your head in the sand, there's going to be a natural curiosity
because they're playing the same course.
Compare the scores. Yeah, that's a natural thing. People are going to look at that.
Why are you so against us comparing the scores?
What are you saying? Because the men finished at 18 under and the women finished at 8 under. What's that telling you then?
Well, I think if it was the other way around, there would be a huge debate.
Why? Why would there be?
Of course there would be.
Why?
Of course there would, because the debate goes the other way. You're just comparing scores. You're not saying, oh, the men are much better than the women, or this, that and the other. But
sure.
It's an interesting thing to look at, Richard.
Well, it's not because it's...
I'm sure everybody listening will be interested on the spread of the scores.
I'll tell you why it's an irrelevance, because the average man hits their tee shot 50 yards further than the average woman. So... what are we?
I watched Celine Boutier hit a drive in the wood onto the last, and I watched Wade Ormsby hit a drive in the wood onto the last.
Yeah, because that's
also
a reachable par five.
Yeah, but Richard,
they've compensated, haven't they?
Richard, you've got the tournament in Jordan.
Take the 17th,
Richard,
for example.
You've got the tournament in Jordan coming up, where you've got Senior Tour, Challenge Tour, and Ladies.
Yeah.
They're all playing the same event, and they're having to structure the tees, so they're all, hopefully, we'll get a mix of players going to the last round. So therefore, there is a comparison.
But that is, no.
And that's why I'm looking at
this. Competing against
that in mind.
They're competing against one another in that event, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
So that's completely a different scenario to what we had here. This was about men and women playing the same event for equal prize money. That was the
agenda. But you are going to compare the scores.
So then why play on the same course then?
Why play on the same course so that you have one whole encompassed event where
you might
everyone
as well play in two different courses.
Is on a level playing field as far as the prize is concerned, not in terms of a level playing field as in scoring against one another?
I think it's interesting to look at the skill sets of both sets of players.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting to look at. Absolutely.
I've caddied on the ladies' tour already this year for Trish Johnson. I've watched Laura play with Laura. She's brilliant. And I watch the girls closely, so I'm full of admiration for them. But I still want to compare the scores. And they were very comparable fields as well in terms of world ranking. You'd agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. But I was just to say, the 17th, for example, a long par three, you know, the men hit, you know, when it's 190, 200 yards, look at the club they're hitting in and compare it. I think it was a very similar tee for the women. The club differential is completely different when you're playing into wind with firm greens. The amount of spin that you can get given the difference in clubs.
Are you saying the 17th tee from 190 yards was the same tee?
A very good question, my learned friend.
I can't remember exactly, but I think it was very, very close.
What,
yes.
Yard.
I'm surprised, Richard, because when I caddied out in Abu Dhabi in the ladies' event before the men's, played Sadiyat Island, is it?
Yeah.
The tees are so far in front. I mean, just miles in front.
Well, it's interesting you say that. So Kim Kaufman, who ended up not winning, but she was up there the whole time.
Let the family down.
She did. I was very upset with Kim.
She's the only Kaufman with any sporting prowess.
Hold on. You're forgetting Smiley.
Oh, who can forget Smiley?
Smiley, PGA Tour winner. Anyway, before the event, she was saying that she was worried that the course was actually too long. She thought the fact that they were sharing 19 of the 36 tees was going to make the women look silly. So she was actually concerned before the tournament started. Then she opened up 66-66, and I think she stopped talking about that.
I've got my hand up for everyone listening,
because
I'm trying to get a word in with our
score.
When you say sharing the tees, does that mean they're on the same tee, but the women are on the front of the tee and the men are on the back? Or is it the same teeing? Same tee block.
I think there were, for example...
You think or you know?
Well,
I
was watching.
Richard.
I watched the whole tournament. I was covering it on TV. And, for example, I saw the seventh, another par three, where there was a men's tee and a women's tee, and there was about two steps between it.
Okay.
So if it was equal prize money, for the ladies that were taking part, it was a big payday?
No. For the LPGA Tour, it was the smallest prize fund of the season. $1.1 million US.
That's their smallest
prize
fund?
That's their smallest, yeah.
So that's right.
Huge prize fund for the Australian players and the European Tour players who are playing.
Absolutely. And there was a lot of players from the ladies' European Tour that got into the field as
I'm sorry, in the ladies...
In the ladies,
yeah. That's what I was referring to.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
not,
what
but not for the...
Not LPGA Tour players. I was talking about
LET players. Yeah. Sarah Kemp, for example.
Exactly.
Great. Yeah.
Exactly.
Huge.
Yeah, massive event.
Well, Charlotte Thomas just won her biggest check of her career. So, yeah, fantastic.
So...
what have we come to there?
That bears my point out.
We've come to that you think it's important to compare the scores and I don't.
I think it's just inevitable.
No, I think it's a natural curiosity that you're going to wonder how both sets of players got on.
I'm more concerned your reticence to do so.
So let's
talk about Saturday.
Is your argument saying then that the men are better than the women? Is that what you're trying to prove?
No, I think when you put them on the same course, it's natural to compare. Why would you not?
You are going to compare, Richard. I'm sorry about that, but the people are going to wonder what was the scoring like? You know. When you see the word equal thrown in there, then you're going to think, right, well let's compare then.
I thought people were going to ask who won.
What I found was
we know that. We've done that.
What I found was interesting was on the Saturday when the wind really blew in the afternoon and Ryan Fox, Lucas Herbert, Jason Scrivener and Flanagan, I can't remember his first name.
Nick Flanagan,
thank you. They all shot four over and all disappeared.
Mm.
Whereas the early starters, Justin Harden, Callum Shinquin and Matthew Steger, all shot 66 and 65 and went flying through the field.
It's a good point.
It was a huge... point in the
week. Discrepancy in the draw, that's right.
Massive.
Well, particularly when you consider there's a third round cut.
Yeah.
Suddenly there was an advantage for not playing so well.
Well, Fox and Herbert
having
missed
an
the
early
cup.
Start.
Missed
and
the
Scott,
third cup.
Scott,
yeah.
Scott Hend as well.
Yeah,
another
they went from looking like the likely winners to not even being able to play.
Although the weather wasn't particularly great for the guys that went out early. Apparently there was a huge
It was more rain, wasn't it?
Not as windy, but yeah, it did become lopsided because of that. I agree. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to David Law, and then we finish with the we sort of put that to bed, or
is
it in a holding pattern?
Maybe carry on afterwards.
Okay, we'll give you maybe a little chance at the end of the show to
Richard's going to buy us a coffee.
That's never going to happen.
No, it's not.
Cross the T's and dot the I's. The 27-year-old Scott finished with a final round of 66, 6 under par, bearing in mind at the crucial time he played the last three holes in 3 under par to win his first tournament on the European Tour. And Jamie called a penalty on himself at the ninth when he caused his ball to move.
Why wouldn't you?
I understand that's a given in golf. If you transgress the rules, you do something wrong, you call a penalty on yourself, but it's still laudable.
Admirable, of course, yeah. But you'd expect anything less from any professional.
And it's worth pointing out Brad Kennedy, who ended up losing by one, he did the same thing on Saturday, so it ended up costing him a shot at the playoff as well.
Brad Kennedy's been going for a long time, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. He's 44 now.
Yeah, he's incredible. He plays very, very well in his home country, I must say.
Japan, he won last year as well, so
did he
plays well there as
well.
Anything else to add, you two? Excellent. Well, the win comes in just his 18th European Tour appearance and he earns €156,000 and more importantly, Jamie, a two-year exemption after not knowing what he was doing. We've got this year and one more, so effectively two.
Well, he can play in his year now, can't he?
Brilliant.
And all the tournament. He would have got most of the events actually off his ranking, but there are certain ones he'd have been just on the edge of, so he knows he's going to get in every event. He'll be looking at the end of season now, trying to get in the end of season events, the big money events there. And obviously, he can plan his whole, as you say, Rob, for 2 years now, and attract more sponsors. Scotland's looking for another new star. Might be him.
Yeah, it might be. Well, let's speak to the man of the moment himself, shall we? First-time winner on the European Tour, Scotland's David Law. David, a fantastic victory, and particularly the way you did it, you must be elated.
Yeah, no, I was absolutely buzzing. At the time, you know, coming down the last few holes, I was just battling hard to try and maybe finish second on my own, third. And then going down the last was the only point. We thought, right, if we make three down here, we could win the golf tournament. And yes, luckily I hit a good tee shot, a good second shot, and hold the putt. So it was certainly not looking yet.
What were your expectations for this year?
If somebody had said to me that you would finish in the top 110 and keep your card, I would put the hand up for that.
David, now you're from the Paul Laurie Golf Centre up there in Aberdeen. What effect has Paul had on your career? Can you tell us that?
Yeah, Paul's been huge. He's helped me out since I was like 15 years old. He's gave me every opportunity to just go and play golf, you know, not had to worry really financially or anything like that. And, you know, that's down to Paul. as well as just having him to lean on, you know, at times when the golf's tough or mentally things are tough or, you know, technically things are tough. He's really hands-on with me, my game, and he's helped me a huge amount.
Have you spoken to Paul since your win?
Yeah, he phoned me last night, so he's delighted. You know, I think he gets more of a kick out of seeing the boys doing well than him playing well himself, which kind of shows you what kind of man he is.
It's 24 hours, you know, since you've lifted your first trophy on the European Tour. Has it sunk in at all? How surreal does it feel?
No, it definitely hasn't sunk in. You know, like I said, this year for me was, you know, my first year on tour, and you know, I was happy just playing these events. It was something completely different to what I've had in the last 7 years as a pro, you know, playing big golf tournaments and playing in front of good crowds. So it's been a whirlwind kind of 24 hours, and I haven't really had a chance to reflect or anything like that. And I'm just going to try and, you know, ride it as much as I can this week in Perth, and then I get a week off next week to reflect and reassess things, I suppose.
David, I was watching the telecast yesterday, and I heard you talking about you talking to your caddy, conversation from the 18th fairway about your second shot in. How do you explain, with the relative inexperience that you've got in that position, the clarity that you had before you pulled the trigger with that second shot?
I played professional golf for 7 years, you know, so winning a golf tournament, whether that's on the EPD Tour, the Challenge Tour, or it's the Scottish Amateur Trophy, you know, you need to treat everything as sort of similar as you can to, you know, just a bounce game at home. And, you know, we were focused, you know, with our goal, and down that last hole, we came off the tee and said, you know, I need to make three. That was the goal for the shot. I mean, if it was a Friday or Saturday, I wouldn't have hit the hybrid. I would have hit a 4-iron to the front half of the green and took two putts and made four and got out of there, you know. But it was a yardage that my 4-iron couldn't get back to the pin, so I would have to try and hold maybe a 60-foot putt. So I just had to take quite a bit of yardage off a hybrid and give it a go. You know, it's, how many times can you say that you've had a chance to win a European Tour event? So it's a moment that you really need to try and grab.
I mean, an incredible back nine, 31 shots. And even more remarkable, David, when you consider what happened at ninth. Just explain to us what did happen.
Yes, it was, I had, like, I think it was about 135 yards to the pin. I was just in the semi-rough and my ball was sitting up perfect. But it was one of them, it was just sitting on top of a blade of grass. And I knew I had to be careful putting the club behind the ball, and I put it down just to the side. And then I was hovering the club just above, and I wasn't going to ground it at all. And I touched a bit of grass beside it, and the ball maybe rolled like an inch off that sort of peak that it was on down. So, you know, obviously I had to call a penalty and replace the ball and go from there, you know. So it was, I really needed to reset, and because I was obviously very annoyed. And my two playing partners at the time, I mean, I think Brad was, he was 6 under through 9 holes, you know, and that was me back to 1 under. So I was seriously behind. But I'm, you know, incredibly proud of, you know, I bounced back, I birdied 10 and 11 straight after that. So, you know, I kept as calm as I possibly could, and I thought I reacted to it well.
Now, David, you were considering packing up the game, weren't you? Was it about a year ago? What was the turning point? What sort of gave you that inspiration to carry on with the game?
Yeah, I mean, I was struggling with my game, and we lost our little boy, Freddie, in July 2017. You know, so things were very tough at home, and you know, I wasn't playing good golf at all. And so, you know, when you're not playing good golf and you're not providing for your family, you can't justify carrying on. And I went back to the Q School the end of that year. I'd lost my Challenge Tour card end of 17. Went back to the qualifying school, and I think I missed out on my main tour card by 3 shots. You know, so I got a full Challenge Tour card back. You know, and I gave it a right go last year. You know, I was dedicated, and but I still, you know, I started off the season quite modestly, and I won the Scottish Challenge in Aviemore, and that was just a huge turning point for me. And the confidence that I gained from doing that, and I kind of led from the front coming down the back nine, and you know, I took so much confidence from it, and I kicked on the rest of the season. And you know, thankfully I managed to get off the Challenge Tour after being out there for 5 years.
David, how much are you looking forward to being on the range this week in Perth with people coming up to you as if you're a different person and a different player?
Well, it'll be something nice, yeah. I've had a load of messages, and it's not been possible even to apply to to them all. So it's cool, you know. I'll enjoy it, and you know, I'm just going to try and embrace and soak everything up from last week. That's for sure.
David, listen, thank you very much for spending time with us. I know you're busy in Australia playing the Perth Sixes. That's coming up as a champion now in the European Tour. A fantastic performance, and life for you and your family is on the up and up. Well done.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, well done, David. Congratulations.
Yeah, well done, David. See you soon.
Thank you.
Oh, it's great to hear, you know, a guy that's realised that he's just won, he's just changed his life, and you could hear the joy in his voice.
I'm not surprised. A nice big paycheck. He's got his exemption.
It's
a great story. He's sitting on the beach in Perth with his feet up, trying to get his little white legs brown. So
That'll never happen. He's Scottish.
That's true.
And also because he's got a 2-month-old kid, he's chance to have a nice little bit of a sleep this week, knowing you've just won your first European Tour event.
Perth's a great city as well,
and a great city, and a great tournament. The Sixes. He's going to enjoy that.
Different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I think it's really good.
On a course, I played a course a few times. It's a great course carrying up.
Now, there was bitter disappointment for long-time leader Wade Ormsby, who had to settle for second place.
Got to try and take the positives from it. Disappointed for sure, but what can I say? Just disappointed. It'd be nice to pinch one on home soil, but anyway, onwards to next week.
I think it was only 4 holes that you dropped shots on the whole week. I mean, it's remarkable consistency. That must be a positive that you can take away from this.
Yeah, game feels strong, you know. I probably had a lot of chances to put everyone away early with a putter, and it's not like a putter battle, it's just burning edges and they just didn't drop. So, but the one that stands out is obviously 17, you know, that kind of just frustrating missing it there when I knew I couldn't miss it there, but anyway, it's the way it is.
What were conditions out there today like? Were they tricky, or was it a day that you could score?
I think it was obviously in between a little bit, you know, the wind was still up and it was still narrowing off some tee shots, but overall it was still there for the taking, but I just had to play a little bit more smart, and I think I did that, and apart from one hole, but anyway, all good.
You wouldn't have thought that Wade, who's a pretty steady player, would have made that ricket at 17.
But first chip, you've got to make 4, haven't you?
You get it on the green, yeah.
Yeah, you got to make 4, but he went for the flop shot, didn't come off. Next chip wasn't good, as Richard's already said. Yeah, he's going to be really kicking himself. To win in your home country, especially on a big event like that.
Especially Australia.
You know, it was in his pocket, really. He thought it was in his pocket as well. So he finishes par, he's in a playoff. Chance are, if he'd have parred 17, he'd probably better the last. So, yeah. But he's playing well the last few years, Wade Ormsby. I followed him when he won in Hong Kong.
Yeah, he won in Hong Kong, that's right.
So that he played fantastic. So he's got a renaissance at the end of his career, to be honest with you. So he's probably playing the best golf of his career.
So he can take a lot of positives in the week.
I think so, yeah.
Once he gets over the initial disappointment, he look back at it and think, you know what, I'm playing well, there's a whole year in front of me, things are good. Other notable performances were Jason Scrivener. He makes it 4 top tens from 5 starts this season, and he finished tied 5th on 15 under par. Richard Kaufman is wagging his finger annoyingly.
No, we're talking, hopefully it's not annoyingly, a remarkable penalty for Scrivener on Saturday. I don't know if you saw what happened. So he had a putt at 15, I think it was to go into a share of the lead for birdie, and his ball was in the way of the next guy putting, so he marked his ball and put the putter down and put the marker to the side. When the guy putted, he came back and he put the marker back, and as he put the marker back, he picked it up and put it in his pocket and walked to the side, forgetting that he shouldn't have done that, and he ended up costing himself a penalty, missed the 5-foot putt for par, ended up with a bogey. And
I got lost in that, Richard.
But it wasn't annoying, Richard, but it wasn't that interesting. It was not pretty fairly interesting.
It's a very rare penalty, isn't it? Picking up your marker and sticking it in your pocket.
You mean he didn't put the ball down?
No.
He just picked the ball marker up?
Yes.
Well, he deserves a penalty. Whatever he was penalised, it wasn't enough.
Was it worth bringing up?
Definitely.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Andrew Johnson failed to make the weekend after he followed his 6 under par 66 first round with a 5 over par 77 in the second round. He's looking for a bit of form, Jamie.
Good ball striker.
Yeah, he is.
Johnson, but I sometimes his putting lets him down. But yeah, that's a discrepancy in his scores. I know the weather was pretty breezy, but there were other good scores when he shot his 77. So just had a bad day at the office. But he likes going down there to Australia.
Yeah.
He travels a lot, the beef. So he says he's playing much better.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to put the scores on
the board.
Lost
quite a bit of weight, didn't he? He's changed his body shape quite a bit.
I didn't notice that, Robert.
Definitely.
Has he?
Yes, for
not
sure.
So much beef.
Yeah,
there's not quite as much beef.
He's
leaner beef.
He's trimmed the waist, but hasn't trimmed the beard.
OK. So, other talking points. James Nitti's made history with a world record equaling 9 consecutive birdies, not for 9 holes, but in the middle of his round on the first round of the tournament. The Australian ran from the 15th to the 5th, and he matched the feat first accomplished by Mark Calcavecchia in the 2009 Canadian Open on the PGA Tour. Bernd Wiesberger made 9 birdies in a row at the 2017 Maybach Championship, but with preferred lies in play on that occasion. Nitti's run of gains, however, made him the first player to officially do it on the European Tour.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I was telling my caddy it's probably the best, one of the best bounce back stats, because I had a double bogey preceding the first birdie. So no, it feels great. Had a chance for the 10th, and I kind of knew, I heard someone had 9 before, so I tried. I didn't leave it short. So no, great feeling, and what a better place to do it in Australia. Only Mark Calcavecchia will know what clicked in his game to go for 9, but I was playing great. I actually played really good the first 4 holes, and then threw a double bogey from the middle of fairway, and I was like, you know what, you're playing pretty good. So, and yeah, obviously I had 9 one putts in a row, that helps. No, just good feeling to have when you rattle off a couple and then you follow it up with about 6 or 7 more.
I remember 8 was the mark for a long, long time. I'm pretty sure Woozy had 8 in a row. Bill Lumier had 8 in a row. There was a whole bunch of them that did that, but nobody had 9 until James Nitti's.
What about you guys? What was your
Rob,
biggest stretch?
Didn't you shoot 27 or something?
I've had a couple of 27s, but didn't have 9 birdies in a row.
You must have had a few.
Yeah, I had quite a few, yeah. There's eagles and stuff in there, but it's about birdieing every hole, and I didn't do 9 in a row.
So what have you done? Do you remember?
I couldn't tell you my birdie run in a row.
I know I've done 5 including 6. An eagle, but I think I might have done 6. But I had a tough spell where I shot quite a few low scores, so you got to, but I don't. It never got. I think once you get to 5, you start panicking a little. You need a good run of par 5, a couple of short 4s where you chip widging in. You need a good little run
stiff
of holes.
A couple of iron shots, you know.
On a good day as well.
You know it goes, you know it goes.
What about you, Rich? Have you ever had a birdie?
Funny enough, not 9 in a row.
Have you had 1 in a row?
But just quickly moving away from that, who would have the biggest bragging rights in the house? So he's sharing a house with Nick Flanagan. Nitti's does a world record 9 birdies in a row the first day. Flanagan shoots a 62 with 2 eagles in the round, 10 under pars leading. So who's bravado's
James
biggest?
James Nitti's.
Yeah?
Well, of course, he's got the record, hasn't he?
Got a record,
lots
yeah.
of 62s.
Yeah, but you were leading.
Lots of people make two eagles. Yeah, where did he finish?
Yeah, top 10, I think. Mm. Tied 10, something like that. Mm.
Have you got any more questions, Rich?
No, that'll do.
Excellent. Now, last week's predictions, we are playing... Oh, no, Jamie, first of all, top 10 from the ISPS Handovic Open, please.
Thank you, Robert. Tied 10th, Callum Shinquin. 72 on Sunday, that's not so good. Tied with Nick Flanagan. Well done, Richard. See, you know all your stats. Tied 8th, Clemens Sordet from France, Nicholas Coltarts. Tied 5th, David Branston, who got himself into a bit of a pickle at the weekend, alongside David Drysdale.
Go on, Jamie. Go on, son.
Bring out the Branston.
Go on, my son.
Alongside Justin Harding, who's played some great golf recently. Runner-up, Brad Kennedy, and Wade Ormsby, and our champ is David Law from Scotland.
Now, last week's predictions, just a reminder of the format. We each get 2 picks, that's presenter and co-presenter. One, though, has to be outside the top 50 from last year's Race to Dubai. 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, but minus 5 for an MC. If you miss the cut, you lose points. So, Dan Robart went for Lucas Herbert, who finished 6 under par, 37th position, 0 points. Jason Scrivener tied for 5th, so he got 10 points. Ewan Murray had Scott Hend, who in the end missed the third round cut, and Kurt Kitayama, 0 points. So with 10 points to the good for Dan Robach and the presenters, the overall score is presenters 75, co-presenters on 10 points. And the guests, Richard Kaufman, are on 0 so far.
Why are you looking at me?
Well, because you'll have your go at the end of the show, of
okay,
course.
I will. Yeah. I will boost that ranking.
Yes, right. Raise the ante. Fancy Race to Dubai game. In the Fancy Race to Dubai game, Joe Hallinan's up the dubs. Team tops the global leaderboard, while Mwethu Mbanga registered the most points from the ISPS Handovic Open. If you want to get involved, you can by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Richard, top 10, please, in the Race to Dubai.
Yeah, I'll start at number 17 because David Law's there. But the top 10 is Ian Porter, Hao Tong Lee. At number 8, Jos Lauten. Number 7, moving up one place, Aaron Rye. David Lipsky at 6, Matt Wallace at 5, Louis Oosthuizen at number 4. Then Bryson DeChambeau at 3. Richard Sterney is number 2. Top of the Race to Dubai rankings is Shane Lowry.
Thanks, Rich. Now, in other news, the RNA and the USGA have announced amendments to the new rule regarding caddies helping their players with alignment in response to what happened with Hao Tong Li and Denny McCarthy in the United States. And the long and the short of it is, and I'll just read you a short bit of the rule, meaning of begins taking a stance for the stroke if a player backs away from a stance the player is not considered to have begun a stance for the stroke. Therefore, a player can now back away from his or her stance anywhere on the course and avoid a breach of the rule if the caddy had been standing in a location behind the ball. Is that clarification, Jamie Spence?
Sort of. But the good thing is here, they know they've not got it right, so they're going back to it and they're trying to make the rule clearer. It's a difficult one.
I think the essence of the rule is right.
I think what can happen now is, Rob, the caddy can say, you better step back out of that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether I've been here long enough.
Fair enough.
I think they should have a warning system with the referees. I think it's unfair just to go straight in there with the two shots. I think if a player and his caddy are in this regime of looking behind the putt, I think that the referee should say, look, you've got to be very, very careful here. They should have a warning, I think.
But are you in favour?
Before they go in with the two shots.
Are you in favour, in general, of the rule to stop caddies lining up players?
100%.
Very good. On the PGA Tour, bad weather has forced the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am into a fifth day with Phil Mickelson leading Paul Casey and compatriot Scott Stallings by three shots. With only two holes left for Mickelson, Paul Casey still with a 3 or 4 foot par putt on the 16th. But it looks like Phil's going to win that. So for the fifth or sixth time.
It's his favourite course, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's
and this year in the summer, it's US Open, same venue, and Phil Mickelson, if he wins that, becomes the sixth player to win the all-time Grand Slam for a career, and it will be his birthday on the Sunday.
Any more ands?
No.
Okay. Well, that's his favourite course, isn't it?
But, I mean, what talking about all things coming together, if all the stars align...
This is his last chance.
Birthday on Sunday, Pebble Beach, looking to be the sixth player to win a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Or a career Grand Slam.
He'd be the oldest winner of a Grand Slam as well, at the age of 48.
So. Amazing. Well, he's still hitting it miles. He's hitting it probably further now than he's ever hit it. It's quite incredible.
Well, that's his chance, isn't it?
Yeah, that is his chance.
Because I can't see him winning on any of the other US Open golf courses like Erin Hill, the ones they've taken to.
He doesn't have to hit a lot of drivers around there. That's the great thing.
Yeah, you know, and he knows it like the back of his hand. Knows the greens, more to the point.
And the Poena greens, yeah. He's very skillful on those, yeah. Now, elsewhere at Pebble Beach, Korea's Ho Sung Choi made his PGA Tour debut but failed to make the cut. The 45-year-old has become an internet sensation after videos of his unorthodox swing went viral. Tiger Woods said, my back hurts just watching it. Well, Tiger Woods' back just hurts anyway. And Patrick Reed said, if it works, it doesn't matter. That's the awesome thing about golf. There are some really weird golf swings out there, but if you perfect your golf swing and you get the ball from point A to point B the fastest, that's all that matters. I know you're a bit of a swing guru, Rich.
Hmm.
What about the swing of Choi then?
Well, it actually has been labelled the fisherman's swing because of the movement that basically acts as if he's gone fishing.
So in layman's terms, describe the action for everyone who hasn't seen it out there that's listening to this.
Well, it's not just the swing itself. It's the foot movement that really is the big thing. I mean, he moves his feet better than an opening batsman for England. That's for sure. There's a lot of movement in the swing, but at the point of impact... I mean, you guys obviously know better than me. The point of impact, it's pretty good.
There's not a lot of movement in the swing on the backswing and the downs. It's the through swing. He sort of jumps out the way of it. And I remember back in the day when we were playing club golf, but there was a guy for Crowborough Golf Club called Jumping James, and he used to do the same thing. As he hit the ball, he would jump out of the way to make sure he swung all the way through it. So he's making a big statement. It's quite theatrical what he does.
It is.
He's
but
doing
it's
just on a way of get, a bit, isn't
it,
he?
Probably. It's just a way of getting through the golf ball and getting out of the way of it. But listen.
He's an interesting story. Would you like to know a little bit about him?
I don't think we've got time,
not,
Rich.
Not really.
How long? Have you got 30 seconds?
Okay. He worked in a supermarket. He didn't play golf until he was 25 years of age. He worked in a supermarket, worked in a tuna factory where he sliced off his thumb, had it reconstructed using flesh from his stomach. He only got into the game of golf by accident because another job he took was at a golf course, just working there and helping out. Took up the game. 5 years after he took up the game, he was playing on the Korean Tour. There you go. 30 seconds. Done.
30 seconds. Well done.
Very good, Rich.
That was excellent. I didn't know about the... I started getting slightly queasy with the stomach replacing the thumb
and all
that. Yeah, I was... Just had that coffee. It was a bit too strong. Anyway, world rankings cannot be calibrated because the Pebble Beach event isn't finished, so we won't go into that. But that's not going to change too much at the top end. Now, this week's event on the European Tour is the ISPS Handa World Super 6 in Perth, Jamie. Another one of the format changes that the European Tour has endeavoured to bring into the schedule. Are you a fan?
I am a fan, yeah.
Good.
It's an event I'm sure we would love to have played.
Yes, definitely.
I think everyone who tees up think they've got a chance. The thing here is you've got to make the first cut after 36 holes, and then there's a 54-hole cut which takes you into the six-hole match play. Richard's nodding, so I'm getting it right so far. 24 players qualify for the match play, and the top eight get a bye from the first.
Yeah,
get a seed. So
yeah.
Getting into that 24 is number one, and you still got to play some pretty good on a tough track, actually.
But the people who make the 36-hole cut get paid. They just don't get into the top 24 to continue on Sunday.
Now you make the cut as a normal event would, top 65 and ties, and then you got to get in that top 24 to get to the match play.
It's been very interesting, actually. The 2 years so far, the first year, Brett Rumford was leading after 54 holes. He became the winner. Now, obviously, if there isn't exactly 24 players, they have to have a playoff. Last year, Kiridek Apibamrat, who ended up winning, was the last man to get through the playoff to get into the Sunday. So we've had...
it's been done both ways.
The two extremes so far.
And you've got two shot makers, two birdie makers there as well. Kiridek, he's won the match play over here as well, hasn't he? The Paul Laurie match play a few years ago. So he makes a lot of birdies. They're the sort of players you're looking for.
Well, the ninth place player in the final standings from the stroke play element plays the 24th place player because you've got those eight byes. 10th place plays the 23rd and so on and so forth. In the second round, the eight winners from the first round will play the eight players that didn't play in the first round. And then it's straight knockout until you get a winner in the final. And each match is over six holes. And that's the thing. It's a super sprint. You like the quick format?
I do. Unfortunately, sometimes they don't get it done after six holes and they have this playoff. I remember a few times it's gone on for maybe 10 and 11 holes. But yeah, I do like it. It's really exciting. The point is it becomes two tournaments. It's so much, you know, Promisawat won the 54-hole event last year. Who cares? He ended up getting knocked out in the second round of the match play. So... you're only as good as the last six holes.
But that's the tournament, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The tournament says you've got to perform right at the end of it, and that's the whole point.
Yeah, I'd love to have played in this.
Six holes.
As I say, everyone teeing it up thinks they've got a chance here winning.
Because once
you get through to the match play, you've only got to beat one bloke.
Yeah,
you've got to beat everybody else.
You win the first turn, and you go, whew, one up, there's only five holes
there. That's right. I'm just going to hang on. Make a few pars if I can.
Makes it hard to pick a winner, though, doesn't it?
It does make it hard, yeah.
But
it does make it hard.
With that in mind, what about the golf course, Lake Carignac? I liked it when I went there.
Yeah, lovely course. Yeah. Kangaroos bouncing all around as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
When I played there, the rough was... they grew the rough up. And
it's thick and juicy. It's that almost like aloe vera.
And it was Goosen one round there by Mark. I mean, I don't know how he did it. I just don't know he did it round there.
The score?
Oh, yeah, the score.
Well, didn't Ernie L shoot 29 under?
It might have been the
Ernie L shot 29 under.
But they've changed it since then. Mike Clayton and Jeff Ogilvie's in the field. They help redesign it.
They just like chopping trees down, those two.
Well, it's good because it's now all... there's no rough.
They just chop trees down. Trees are the enemy.
That's what you like, Rich. No rough.
No rough. See great. The shot-making skills of the players.
Great course. Being great, Nick. Be a good week.
Clayton and Ogilvie just want every course to be Royal Melbourne. And of course, every course is
nothing
Royal
wrong
Melbourne.
With that, I guess.
No, but if that's what your course is, but you can't turn every course into that.
No.
Quite hilly as well, quite up and down.
Yeah, it is from the clubhouse perched on top of the hill. Yeah, you're quite rolling.
Isn't the first at Lake Carignac you kind of over the edge of the lake?
No,
it's down the hill.
It's short part four.
Short part four, yeah.
Straight down the
hill. Where's the
amber right to left?
Where's the golf course in Australia where you tee up and you carry the corner of the lake?
The Lakes in Sydney.
Oh, that's Sydney, the Lakes.
There's a clue in the name.
The famous Richard Boxall one.
Well, we were on the putting green. Yeah, we were on the putting green.
Go on, reveal.
No, it was it was only about a 2-10 carry over the lake. And it was into a gale. So I'm on the putting green. I'm behind Boxall, and he's panicking.
Mm.
And the starter just comes out with his, "Well, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's a bit of a hole up here on the first." He says, "Quite a lot of professionals can't get over the lake."
Yeah, apparently, according to Boxall...
And he was right.
Now, apparently, according to Boxall, the group in front hooked three shots into the lake on the left, and the guys in front of them spooned it right. They all took seven. On the tee, Richard Boxall.
Yeah.
Apparently
slight,
went like
slight
that.
Slight elaboration, but yeah, he's right. And the starter was also correct. You couldn't get over the lake.
That's right.
So Boxy got wet, yeah.
I had to go around the pathway. I almost hit it in the trees.
If you can't carry the lake, there's nowhere to go. Nowhere here. Yeah.
It was funny.
It was very funny. But great golf course. Should be a lot of fun. And Kiridek will be defending.
No, he won't. He won't be there.
He won't be there?
No.
That's a shame. Always like to see a defending champion go back, but obviously his schedule may have changed this year a little bit. So in the field, discuss who's in it. I know Thomas Peters is playing.
Tom Lewis,
Richard McAvoy, Wade Ormsby, Wade Ormsby might be a sneaky little bet after feeling like he was unjustly undone last week, Rich, you think?
Yeah, potentially so. Yeah, I mean, there's a, yeah. he wouldn't be... Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to pick yourself up, I think, after that. Immediately. He might do it later on in the season, but, yeah, he won't be on my list.
Go on, Jamie, give us a few more names.
Well, David Law's playing. Yeah. Jason Scrivener, who played well last week, and he's played well here as well. Lucas Herbert, a very impressive young Australian golfer. Who's unlucky last Saturday, actually, got the worst of the weather. He's coming back here, and of course, a game that he likes. You've got to look towards the Australian players. It seems to do very well here. Ryan Fox, the New Zealander. Will it suit his game, the length he hits it? Scott Hend, I don't know. It's always handy if you're in it 40 yards past your opponent, I guess. Nicholas Kolsarts.
What about Adrian Ottagi, won the Belgium event?
Yeah, he's got to have a chance.
Which
was
shortened to nine holes, wasn't it? It's a similar format, not the same though. Yeah, but again, different.
Yeah, it's a match play. He won the Paul Laurie out in where were we in Germany?
Both his wins have been match.
Yeah, that's
match
right.
Play events. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, pick one of those.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, Jamie, and you being a long way back on that side of the table.
Not me. I've not been sitting in this SIGD.
Well, I understood how things are going to pick up this week in terms of the co-presenters scores-wise. So I that's a given. So
first pick?
I always give you first pick.
Oh, do you? Okay, well, I'll go for Lucas Herbert as my first pick.
Okay. I'm going to go for a mild-mannered Belgian.
Thomas Peters.
Which
one?
Thomas Peters.
Thomas
Peters.
Yeah. You pick him every week.
I think Peters should be a world number one. And I don't understand why he's not a world number one. Anyway, I'm going...
Because you keep picking him.
I'm going with Thomas Peters.
Are we going to allow Kaufman to have a selection here?
To just put a spanner in the works. Yeah, go on, Rich. On
well, yeah, Luke, I had a choice of two and two, and Lucas Herbert was one of those. I'll go for the other Australian that was on my mind then, Jason Scrivener. He's a local lad. I mean, he's been playing that golf course since he was 12, 13 years of age. He's had some really good finishes there. So, yeah, I'll go with Scrivener, who hasn't finished outside the top 16 all season so
far. The old six-hole knockout thing is going to be a great leveller. It's going to be a great leveller. So,
second pick?
Yes.
I'm going for another Australian.
Ooh!
Wade Ormsby.
Wade Ormsby, you see? Yeah.
So you disagree with me that you think he can bounce straight back?
Well, obviously he does.
Well, he's been around a long time. If you don't get over adversity in this golf and pick yourself up, that's the whole point of the game, and that's the strength these players have. So I'd be surprised if he doesn't put in a good performance.
I think he'll be ready to rock this week as well, yeah.
Too. And who's your other one, Robert?
I'm going to go for Ashley Chesters.
Not another Belgian?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to go for Ashley Chesters, and my first pick is Thomas Peters, because I think for six holes, he can sort of hang on to it all.
Now, we know who he's going to pick now. I can tell you who he's going to pick.
Go on.
Another Australian.
Ottagi.
No. Remember, this event is tri-sanctioned, Australian, European and Asian tour.
So yes. Going for Jazz.
Well, I had between three players. Jazz was on my mind, certainly was. Jazz, Jane Watanand.
Johnny hates Jazz.
But it was then down to, really it's down to two, Chikarangapar and Poom Siksansin. Now, Chikarangapar, you said you need birdies this week, yeah?
Chikarangapar.
Chika, as he's known, to shorten his name.
If you're in the know.
Finished second in Mauritius on the European Tour.
So he's going to be Chikaranga Birdie.
Had 28 birdies last week, winning a tournament in India.
He is Chikaranga Birdie.
No, he's Chikarangapar.
Well, he said that.
Oh,
I don't think Chikarangapar is going to get it done. I think it needs to be Chikaranga Birdie.
So he had 28 birdies last week. And then there's Poom Siksansin, who took down the likes of Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson to win on the Asian Tour at the end of last season.
Where is he in the world rankings?
Henrik Stenson called him Poom Assassin.
Where's Poom in the world rankings?
I don't know what his world ranking is right now. I
don't know. Is he?
Oh, he's about 100th, something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Well, you've taken us around the world. Who are you going to pick?
So I'm going to go with, Chika. It's Chika time.
Chika. Well, there you are, Richard Kaufman joining in from the third seat, and we'll see if he can raise the level of zero total so far for the third man. I think, Richard, you could be the dark horse this week. I really do.
You never know.
So let's say goodbye, because that is it for now. Next week, we will look back at this event, the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth, and also look ahead to the WGC Mexico Championship. So do join us for that. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Jamie Spence, just to remind you, who's gone for?
Lucas Herbert and Wade Ormsby.
And Richard Kaufman has gone for?
Jason Scrivener and Chika.
And Chika. And me, Robert Lee, has gone for Ashley Chesters and Thomas Peters. It's goodbye from the three of us.